It's the Bo's Nose Show with your host, Jay Bolshevich. You can give Jay a call right now at 646-721-9887. That's 646-721-9887.
Good evening and welcome to the Bo's Nose Show, and I'm your host, Jay Bozovich. And it's a rainy, windy day in Oregon here, and we've had some pretty interesting weather for Oregon. A lot of thunder and lightning, which is not too normal for the Willamette Valley necessarily. Might be a little bit more normal in eastern Oregon or southern Oregon in the summertime. But it's not very normal here, and with that, they even had a couple of tornadoes up near Portland and on the north side of the river there in Washington State, Clark County. It's been kind of a wild, woolly day. It's the kind of day that you really appreciate the linemen that work for the utility companies and the road crews that have to clear the roads and all that stuff, because they're out there in that nastiness, doing the work that keeps us moving and keeps the lights on while we're inside nice and toasty, or at least in our cars waiting in traffic while they clear the roads. But, it's a nice day to appreciate those folks that actually work outside and keep things moving for us in this inclement weather. So tonight is actually a no-guest night, and I'm hoping that you, the listeners, will help me out a little bit and call in. Lots of subjects we've been talking about lately on the last couple shows, some subjects that have been in the news lately that, might stir a few things up. Recently we approved a parks master plan, and the folks down in the Florence area were a little concerned about the Ocean Woods parcel in the master plan. We didn't approve the master plan. We started drafting one. Let me correct that. We're drafting a parks master plan, and the draft had the sale of a parcel down in the Florence area that some folks were pretty concerned about. We can talk about that because we actually hit the reset button on that draft master plan. Recently, we had a little discussion and approved some salary changes for our non-represented employees that made the news quite a bit. Also had some discussions recently, or at least a letter from folks that are looking to develop the property there at 6th and Oak in Eugene that want to convert a 99-year lease to an actual sale of the property. That's created a little bit of controversy too. More than happy to talk about that as much as I can. A few other things going on. We've got this new thing called the Fern Ridge Community Policing District out here in the Vinita, Elmira, Notai, Crow, Alvador area that has got a few people stirred up, because I think they're starting to realize that their taxes will actually go up if this thing gets approved. And they're kind of wondering, so what are they going to get for that tax money, and how do I benefit? And we can talk about that in some detail. I would also recommend folks go back and listen to the archived show from a few weeks back, where I spoke with Steve Reister about the Fern Ridge Community Policing District. He's the leader of the group of citizens that's actually putting that forward. We can talk about some upcoming stuff for the Board of Commissioners. This week, we're going to be talking marijuana. And we all know that Measure 91 passed here in Oregon, and the state then revised it with House Bill 3400. And they gave us until the end of the year to put in place any time, place, and manner restrictions on the recreational marijuana industry. And we are going to have a hearing and probably approve some land use regulations of that industry next Tuesday. And we can talk a little bit about marijuana and where it might be in conflict with what uses out there in rural Lane County, or even when it gets closer in town. That's fair game too. Or we can just talk about national or state politics. And one of the subjects, that I think we may get into later in the show today is I think we want to talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act. The board has had a presentation from Trillium and the Oregon Health Authority recently, and we talked a little bit about the future of how it's going to affect Oregon and may affect Trillium and Lane County. And it's a little surprising some of the budget holes that may be coming up in the next biennium and the following biennium. And then there's just a little bit of the personal side. My producer has had to deal with this as being unemployed for a short while and not being under coverage, and is now going to be penalized during her period of unemployment, and also how that impacts her, what it's going to cost. And I have an employee that I was just talking to today. My wife and I own a small business together. I should say it's probably my wife's employee. I just take out the trash every Wednesday and change the light bulbs they can't reach. But you know, the employee is also on some of these exchanges because she doesn't have coverage through the business because we only have four employees in the business, including my wife. And so we don't have a health plan. And her husband's health plan is too expensive to put family on, so it's actually cheaper for her to have an individual policy. But the deductibles on that are so high, and the cost is so great, and the ability to deduct health care expenses from your taxes in the next year. So the bar is so high. It's really interesting how this is all impacting some people personally, and how all the rates going up next year are really going to be hurting their cash flow on a day-to-day basis. So lots of topics out there. Don't forget our number, 646-721-9887. Just press 1 if you want to get in the queue. We also have email at talk@krbnradio.net. Again, that's talk@krbnradio.net. Or if you're on the website there, you can go into the chat room, and we monitor that chat room too. So three ways to get into the conversation. So feel free, give a buzz anytime, and we can talk about all sorts of things. But I wanted to talk a little bit about raises, because I think that's probably been the most controversial thing that the Board of Commissioners dealt with recently. And it's one of those things that's interesting, that what is considered to be a fairly conservative Board of Commissioners, four registered Republicans, one Democrat, voted 3-2, and it was all Republicans voting in favor of changing our pay structures with these non-represented employees. And, you know, outwardly, most people go, that's not a very conservative thing to do, to give public employees any sort of wage increase. And I think, you know, first blush, I would have thought the same thing. If that's all I knew about the story, was that we voted to increase salary structures. And one of the things I want to make clear is it wasn't raises to people necessarily. We changed the salary structures, and the employees as of January 1st of 2016 will move to the closest step in the new range. So some employees may get, you know, 50 cent an hour to, you know, 75 cent an hour raises. Some of the employees are only going to get a penny because that's how close the next step is. And then they have to wait, you know, if they didn't move from the top step to a top step where they're frozen, they'll actually have to wait till they get to their anniversary date to get their annual step increase. And then they might get to the top of the scale. And in particular with the employees where the scale moved up, the top of the range moved up 14%. A little bit more than 14%, it'll actually take them 3 years to get to the top of the range. And these are employees that actually didn't have a raise since 2008, which the Register Guard kind of got wrong and said it was 2009. The only raise they've had is a 1.5% COLA during that period. So if you're one of those employees that was at the top step in that range that got to 14%, and it takes you 3 years to get up there, you really will only have had a little 16.1% over 10 years. So that's about a 1.5% a year, maybe, average increase over that whole time. But you delayed most of that to the tail end. So you really didn't benefit in the early years from all that. It was, you know, backloaded. But what's been happening in Lane County is, you know, these non-represented employees, and there's 215 of them, are mostly our managers, but they're also HR employees that can't be in unions because they actually deal in an adversarial position with unions by, you know, dealing with grievances, union contracts, or they're employees in sensitive positions that can't be unionized. So it's a weird kind of eclectic group of employees, but they do a lot of the things that actually help Lane County save money. For instance, you know, our wellness and benefits manager and our HR department head helped implement a self-insurance program for Lane County this fiscal year that's going to save us $2 million in this year alone. So, you know, just with two of those employees, we're going to gain $2 million worth of savings in this fiscal year, and then there'll be repeatable savings every year in the decreased administrative costs of paying a third-party administrator for our health insurance plans to provide it. So, and there's been other you know, initiatives that have been done by non-representative employees that represent millions of dollars of savings, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings. But what's been happening with these non-represented employees is we're having a harder and harder time successfully recruiting replacements for them. And that we, I could provide examples. And, you know, one in particular is we've been trying to recruit a new tax appraisal manager. And of course, that requires some certifications about being a certified appraiser. So there's, you know, various certifications they have to have. And there's a small labor pool that has that set of certifications. We're actually in competition with the private sector that also does house and property appraisal work for banks and everything else. And we posted that three times unsuccessfully. And that's a critical position in that that assessment taxation office collects taxes not only for Lane County, but 82 other taxing districts around the county, every fire district, every city, every school district, every district that has a tax we collect for, whether it's the Fernbridge Library District or the Siuslaw School District or South Lane Fire, we collect their taxes. And one of the things that puts us in danger of is not being able to fill staff in that department is we get a grant annually from the state department's costs, and we could actually fall below the level of employment and service level that would cause us to lose that state grant and cause that department to have significant problems in certifying tax rolls and collecting those taxes for Lane County and the 82 other agencies. So that inability to get successful recruitments in some of these positions, you know, was a sure sign that we were out of market with some of our salary structure. At the same time, we interview people as they leave the county and go to other positions. The, you know, several years ago, the number of people that answered that they were leaving in this non-rep group that they were leaving for higher pay was roughly, you know, 10 to 15%, usually other reasons like my spouse moved out of the area, whatever. That's jumped up to almost 50% of the people who are leaving for higher pay. And we're getting a higher turnover rate in that group. So it was pretty obvious that we had a issue with keeping these really critical people. I mean, these are the folks that, you know, manage six community health centers. They're the folks that deal with some very regional projects like our regional GIS services. They're the folks that, you know, manage the system of roads we have. They're the folks that manage our solid waste disposal system. Really important, critical functions, and keeping that those employees, those positions staffed is really critical to the function of the county. So we are faced with a tough decision, and a decision that doesn't normally look conservative, but in the long run it actually is, because the cost of an unfilled an unsuccessful recruitment for a lower paid position can be $4,000, $5,000, $10,000. When you start getting into some of the higher paying positions where you're doing national recruitments, because there's such a small labor pool involved, because of, you know, licenses and certifications. And if you don't think licenses and certifications aren't important. Just look at the city of Eugene's news recently with their traffic engineer. When we have an unsuccessful recruitment for higher pay, it can cost us as much as $100,000. And it's not just how much it costs to advertise, fly people in, interview them, the time of the people on the interview panel and all that stuff. It's also what were we doing and what revenue or what services weren't rendered and what opportunities are lost when that position goes unfilled. And that's really a critical thing. Recently we had a lot of trouble filling our building officials position in our permit review department for building permits. Requires some certifications to be a building official in the state, because they're ultimately the one that's responsible for all the permits they approve. The permit review people work, at the authority of the building official. Well, that problem caused permit delays, and when you delay permits, you delay commercial activity and business in Lane County. So there is an impact to that. So choosing to spend some money to make sure we are competitive with the market and could recruit good people in these positions is actually a conservative position, because what we're doing is saving money in the long run. These are the folks that are going to come up with the million-dollar cost savings ideas. These are the folks that are going to keep our county running smoothly. They're going to keep the permits rolling through so we can have the economic activity. They're going to be the people that bring in the Winnebago RV manufacturers to Junction City. That same group of employees is in our economic development department. So really important to have well-qualified employees in these positions and to be able to compete for them, and then to not lose them because the cost of recruit. So in the short run, in the first blush in the news might have seemed kind of, why'd you do that, Jay? Why'd you do that, Board of Commissioners? Why are you spending that money? All I can say is it's actually money well spent, because it will ultimately save the taxpayers money. And one thing I can say is this group of employees has put off for almost 8 years now raises, and in that time we have saved, in comparison to other agencies that were granting raises during that period, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in deferred salary costs. And it's just time that we bring those positions up to competitiveness, because at this point we're starting to have unsuccessful recruitments, and we can't go without some of these positions. They're critical to the function of the county. So that, if that doesn't generate some thoughts on some folks, we can go to some other subjects here, and maybe I'll bring Robin into the conversation here a little bit, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act, because this is an interesting thing. We had a presentation to the board a couple weeks back, maybe it's almost 2 months back, and one of the things I asked about and asked before the folks from OHA came to see us was, that's Oregon Health Authority. Excuse me, I'm an engineer by trade, and I tend to talk in acronyms. We asked them, what's the risk coming up? Because I had heard vaguely that there was going to be a change over time with the Affordable Care Act and how they reimburse states for each person that signed up in it. That reimbursement was going to start dropping over time. And the presentation that the OHA folks gave us, and they said, of course, this is draft. They don't know if it's going to be for real, and there's a lot of assumptions involved, the usual things people do when they're presenting future budget numbers further out. But for the 2017 to 19 biennium, they're predicting $497 million will be needed to balance the budget for the decrease in affordable care. So that's $500 million they're going to have to come up with in the next biennium. That's on top of what PERS is going to be doing in the Supreme Court decision around PERS, where they basically threw the reforms out. They're going to have to make up all that money on the state side too. So the 2017 to 19 legislative session up there in February of 2017, and even 2016, they ought to start thinking about this. How are they going to prepare for that kind of a budget hole at the state? And it gets worse. In the next biennium, they're talking about a $1.7 billion shortfall in the Affordable Care Act and the Oregon Health Plan. That's a lot of shekels. So, you know, that's on the budget side, which may impact what's passed down to the counties, and we'll see that in our Health and Human Services Department quite significantly. And the reason they were reducing those reimbursements is that was supposed to be because we were going to get all these cost savings by putting everybody on these health insurance plans. But these health insurance plans aren't exactly what everybody thought they were going to be, and the amount of people signing up tend to be the people that actually need the health insurance, and it seems like there's a lot of people that are skipping it over. I have an employee that's 19, just turned 20, and he told me today that he just hasn't bothered signing up because the penalty's so low, it's cheaper than paying for the premiums. And of course, you know, he's, you know, an indestructible 19-year-old, well, 20-year-old now, he just turned 20 last week, 20-year-old male that thinks he's never going to have a health insurance issue, so he's just going without. And, you know, hopefully it'll work out for him, but that's just kind of the way he is. And then, you know, then there's the other side where they, you know, these penalties aren't, you know, terrible, but they come into play even when you have, when you're on insurance, unemployment insurance, and you're unemployed. And Robin, you've got some experience around that, don't you?
Yeah, I do, actually. Because the way the law reads, if you are not covered with insurance for 2 months, you are then subject to the penalties.
So, and you got into a position where you got laid off from your job, and of course, you know, like everybody else in this economy, you were out searching for a job pretty actively. I mean, I know you've got a great work ethic. And you finally did find one, but of course, you know, anytime you start a new job, even though it might be full time with benefits, quite often the benefits don't kick in until 30, 60, or 90 days into the job, if not even 6 months. So you're actually going to go past the 2 months of non coverage, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm probably going to be subject to 5 or 6 months worth of penalties.
Do you have any idea what that's going to calculate to?
I won't know that till the end of the year when they do the taxes, but I can tell you the rate, though, that for 2015, and this is coming straight off the healthcare.gov website, so that's my source. But 2015 is 2% of your household income, or which is $325 per adult, with a maximum of $975. But 2016, when the Obamacare goes into full effect, is 2.5% of your household income to a maximum of $2,085 per person.
Wow. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things my employee I was talking to today about, who's insured, self-insured on an individual plan because her husband's to insure on her husband's plan is actually more expensive than the self-insurance. Her plan's costing her $500 a month. So it's still cheaper to pay the penalty unless her two and a half, you know, for $2,000, you know, than it is to pay, you know, the $6,000 to be insured during the year. But, you know, there's such a risk in that. But even her $500 a month plan has a $5,000 deductible. So she doesn't start gaining any benefits of paying that $500 until she uses up $5,000 worth of medical bills, which isn't hard to do because her son had a skateboarding accident. He ran past the deductible in a really quick fashion. Yeah. Only takes one trip to the emergency room to really eat up $5,000. People don't realize how fast that can go. But
absolutely, that deductible resets every year.
Yeah, and then it'll reset. So know, there'll be many a year where she, you know, she's probably could have made off better by paying the penalty to some degree. And that's kind of what's happening is people are weighing that risk. Do I pay the penalty or do I get some insurance that's going to have a high deductible? Because if, in order to be affordable, if you want insurance with a copay and only like a, you know, $1,000 deductible or something, you're going to be paying $3,000 or $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month for that kind of a plan. So, you know, paying the penalty and going uninsured, taking that risk, that's a gamble some people are taking. Quite often people taking the gamble are the younger, healthier folks, and that was who was supposed to come into the system to subsidize the folks that aren't so healthy, and the people that aren't so healthy are actually the ones buying into some of these exchanges and all that and utilizing the system even more than you would think. So it kind of doesn't seem to quite be achieving the goal it set out to, which was let's put all these people together in a larger, make the pool larger, and we'll distribute the cost better. Plus, if they have the coverage, then they'll go get preventative, and supposedly that'll save us money down the road. And I'm just, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the examples I'm seeing personally, you know, yourself who goes unemployed and can't avoid not having insurance, to my young buck that thinks he's indestructible that won't get insurance, would rather pay the penalty, to, you know, my employee that has the huge deductible, you know, you're not going to go do a lot of preventative care if it's, you know, coming out of your pocket. Every time you go to the doctor, they wait till they're really sick, you know, because they really don't want to pay, you know, unless they, you know, I can't imagine, you know, maybe after the skateboard accident, at least for that individual, but there's, you know, there's also a family maximum out of pocket, you know, that they have to hit too. So it's really, I don't see people doing the preventative care. Do you see that with the, is there, in your sphere of influence, are you seeing friends and family that are suddenly doing better preventative care because the Affordable Care Act came into being a few years ago?
Not really. In fact, one of the, one of the issues that you don't hear very much is when you do the numbers, for example, like I'll take my household, for example, just round numbers, it cost me $1,500 a month just to stay in the house with all the bills. And then if you're making $1,700 take home, you've only got $200 a month for food and other incidentals. You know, you can't afford $400 or $500 a month for insurance. It just physically is not there.
And so if it's not coming through an employer, you're just not going to go out and get it. But then you're faced with now a almost $2,100 penalty. You know, and that's, you know, not cheap either per month. You're looking at, you know, almost $200 a month right there. There goes your food money.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'm you know, for the working poor, this is a really tough piece of legislation. I don't think it was really well thought out. Could have gone a few different ways. I think it would have been much more advantageous than the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, the one thing I will say is, at least in the short run, it's allowed Lane County to open some additional clinics and get some folks into the Oregon Health Plan. That's definitely expanded quite a bit. But we're having a whole lot of trouble finding primary care providers for those folks that got added. So it's like we get them into the insurance pool, but they don't have a primary care provider. That doesn't really mean they're getting any preventative care. It just means they've got a insurance coverage if they do end up in the emergency room or wherever else. We're still seeing a lot of health care being done in emergency rooms versus doctor's offices, which is really, you know, not going to save the money that's going to prevent this looming $500 million budget hole in the state's budget and another $1.7 billion budget hole in the following biennium. You know, that's, you know, $2.2 billion over 4 years. That's a lot of money. And you know, they were arguing with the counties over whether they were going to fund $20 million for prison diversion programs that they promised to give us $60 million for originally, and they ended up only giving us about $30 million. You know, so we're arguing between 60, 20, and $30 million on something they promised, you know, that was going to save, you know, the prison diversion programs are just intended to save the state $600 million over 10 years. What are they going to do when they're faced with $2.2 billion they got to come up with? You know, we're going to, you know, where's the money going to come from? What programs are going to get cut? You know, is it, you know, all the new money they provided schools this last year, you know, that they were so desperate to try and increase the school bus budgets. You know, it's a huge liability for the state, which then turns out to be a huge liability for the counties. It's kind of interesting today. We've got a new auditor. You know, this is something that we kind of didn't fund for a while at the county, partly just as a cost savings measure. And we brought the auditor back, partly just because we felt it was important for transparency. And ultimately, we're hoping that it actually saves us money in the long run, too, because one of the things a performance auditor does is it looks at risk. And I had a meeting with the new auditor today, and she's starting to do some work on financial indicators for the county. You know, what's the right things for us to be tracking to assess the financial health of Lane County? And we were talking about risk factors and changes. And one of the things we talked about today was, what are the trends that are showing our financial risk? And one of the things we talked about was, what percentage of Lane County's budget is grants? And is funded through grants from the federal government, the state government, or outside entities of some kind? And that amount has grown so significantly compared to all other revenue streams. And grants are something that people can choose to stop giving out, or you can be unsuccessful in getting that grant re-upped. It's a huge risk to the county. And the other part we talked about was, what percentage of our budget comes from the state versus local funding? And because of the capitation of property taxes with Measure 5 at 47 and 50, you know, property tax can't grow much more than 3 or 4% annually. But we've had become more and more dependent on the state or the federal government through the state, which is where our, you know, the Affordable Care Act comes down to Lane County. And what that does is puts us at the whim of the legislature and how much they're willing to allocate to the programs that trickle down. And that we provide the service, but the state provides the funding. And it's really getting risky for local governments, in that so little of their revenue is locally generated under local control. And the ability to actually increase or turn the knobs on local revenues is so limited by state law that it's really difficult for us to deal with any situation in a local manner. So we have this huge risk where we have to wait for them to make decisions on budgets. I mean, school districts are an even worse situation, where 100% of their funding is funneled through the state, and they have to wait to see what the legislature allocates annually before they can really figure out what they're doing budget-wise. You know, that's part of what we reaped with the sowing of Measure 5 and some of the early tax reform things. I perfectly understand why tax reform got to be such an issue in the 90s, since people were losing houses for property tax bills. But I think there were some unintended consequences, one of which is we have now lost local control of our government and our schools, and everything's being pushed up to the state and federal level. And with that, you don't see folks that are willing to understand what's happening on the ground here locally. You know, you see people in Washington, D.C. trying to develop a forest plan for Western Oregon that really have no idea what the Western Oregon forests are like, and are developing just trash right now when it comes to what they're looking at for the ONC forests. You have people in the EPA making decisions around air quality. This is probably a great example. Everyone understands that we have some issues with wood smoke in the winter times due to the inversions here in Western Oregon. And Eugene Springfield isn't under any mandates because we haven't violated the standards often enough to put us in a mandate situation. But the city of Oak Ridge has, and they're kind of in this little valley there up in Oak Ridge, and they have a really bad inversion problem. And, of course, the federal government requires you to put the sensing devices in the absolute worst spot in the city because they want the worst measurement. And they're having trouble. You know, they're always just over enough to keep them under the federal mandates. Well, when the federal government was involved, EPA was trying to figure out who they were going to control, they declared that the airshed there included the town of Westburg. Now, anyone that lives locally and could have been in local control of this knows, and I sit on the LRAP, the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority Board, we all know that Westburg's over the hill and in a different valley than Oak Ridge, and that their valley actually connects really well with the Willamette River Valley that it flushes out. They don't get versions there, whereas Oak Ridge has kind of got a dead-end valley. It's almost like a box canyon, so to speak, and they get terrible versions there. So they included the town of Westburg in the mandates over wood smoke and having to obey this red, yet orange, green sort of burning scenario. And they have nothing to do with the Oak Ridge airshed. But it's some bureaucrat either up in Seattle at EPA or way in Washington, D.C., looked at a map and drew a circle that included Westburg because they're not local. And the risk of losing local control leads to decisions like that. And I think one of the things that we did when we approved the constitutional amendment for Measure 5 is we stripped local control from our local governments. And as such, now we have the legislature in Salem making decisions around funding for local programs and putting us at risk of their mistakes when they do things around PERS that end up getting overturned by the courts and end up having to make a budget hole. It's going to be the programs that we could have been funding and administering locally that are going to suffer, but we're having to deal with what the state brings in. So kind of, one of those things where you kind of go, if I could have thought about that back when Measure 5 was on the ballot, would I have changed my vote? What do you think, Robin? Would you have changed your vote if you understood what it meant for local control?
Well, you make a good point, and it happens a lot, is that it's easy for, like, say, Salem or even D.C. to come up and look at a map and say, well, yeah, one size fits all. For example, comparing us to Portland, it's completely two different animals, but it's easier to throw everybody in the same shoe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that there's a state senator, I think, or is it a state? Is Denver a representative or a senator? Can't remember off the top of my head. But he proposed today a split minimum wage for the state. So finally, somebody at least is recognizing that there's a difference where it was a higher wage in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties, a medium tier of minimum wage in places like Eugene and Salem, and a lower wage for the rest of the rural Oregon. So at least somebody in the state starting to recognize that Portland is not Oregon. But it's amazing how dominated by the Portland group thing Salem is. The redistricting that was done in 2001 by Bill Bradbury and then magnified by Kate Brown in 2011, puts, if you actually look at the physical address of most of the legislative representatives and senators, they have a Portland city address. It's because they did a bunch of pie-shaped districts that the tip of the pie goes into the city of Portland, and then the fatter wedge of the pie towards the crust, if you know what I mean, comes out into some rural areas where it's low population. It's intended that that heavy Democrat Portland population in the tip can outvote the people out near the crust. And what happens is almost all those representative districts, the person lives in the tip of the pie. So we have a very Portland-centric legislature. In fact, the Speaker of the House lives in Portland, so that's the way they think. And therefore, they're the ones that are making budget decisions around who gets what funding and all. And as they start looking at a contraction, possibly in 17 and 19, to fill these big holes in the, the assumptions they made around the PERS reforms actually staying in the courts and all, and the not really truly preparing for the taper down of the reimbursements of the Affordable Care Act, they're going to be thinking Portland-centric if they make those cuts. So it even puts us at double risk. And I sure wish I had control of that, those levers here locally, those decisions with our share of the money. But unfortunately, Measure 5 tipped the balance to where they're making those decisions in Salem. So it's an interesting thought exercise. Would I have voted for Measure 5 back then? Because, I think I may have voted for it, because I think I got here just in time for that vote when I moved out here from the East Coast. I moved out in 93, and I think Measure 5 was 1994. And,
well, if I can jump in there for a second, Jay, that when Measure 5 came out, I was fully in favor of it, speaking as a citizen's point of view, because property taxes were getting so high. In fact, they're still getting pretty high that you can almost not afford them. That's why sometimes I wonder if the people in Salem, if they were making, say, an average wage, like, say, $40,000 roughly, to keep them kind of in touch with the average citizen, maybe they'd think twice about some of the funds or the taxes they try to raise.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of proposals, coming out. Labor groups are talking about putting a measure on the ballot for next year to raise taxes to support state services. They're talking about a 2.5% value-added tax of some kind. It's a really odd tax system they're looking at. It's just scares me to death, because it's just handing more money to the central government in Salem versus where it really ought to be coming in is at local government level. I mean, it's a whole lot easier to talk to your county commissioner or your city councilor than it is to talk to the governor about what's going on in government. It's a whole lot easier to replace a county commissioner in the next election cycle. Incumbency has some importance, but all you have to look at is I barely won my reelection because there was a strong effort to try and unseat me. You don't see that easily the way the gerrymandering of the districts went, and the legislature is really difficult to swing the control of the state legislature from one caucus to the other. It's nearly impossible to get a statewide elected office change very much from the local level. But you can get you can unelect a city councilor really easily if you can organize the ward they come from. That was the model of how this country was really founded. It was really supposed to be that your local government was the biggest government there was. Back as we looked at forming this union, federal government was supposed to be the weaker than state governments and supposed to be smaller than state governments in proportion. And in the states, the local townships and municipalities and counties were actually supposed to be stronger than the state government and larger. And we flipped that exactly on its head. And the most powerful government we have is the national government. It's the furthest from the people. And the weakest governments we've created now are those that are closest to the people. Somehow or another, that's got to change in this country. And I wish I knew the magic spell or whatever that could flip that around. But I think just with time, people are going to start seeing that and supporting strong local government, because I think that's where you're going to see real change. It's the local governments that are going to fight and look at, why does the federal government control 55% of the land in Lane County? And Washington, D.C. gets to do that versus the county commissioners in Eugene, in the county seat in Eugene controlling that 55%. Or why isn't it that forest that is located close to the town of Triangle Lake or something like that? Why isn't there a local governance board for that forest? They determine what's best for that land. It's kind of we flipped the whole system on its head. And I think the Affordable Care Act and how it's putting us at risk is an interesting thing. But to swing the conversation back around, I mentioned PERS a couple times. And early in the show, we were talking about the new salary structure for unrepresented employees, or non-reps, as we call them. Lane County has done a great job with PERS. I mean, everybody talks about how it's going to be really costing school districts, and that court decision is really going to hurt them. And there was an article in the Oregonian with a graph that looked like the proverbial hockey stick turning way up in the next couple bienniums as far as the unfunded liability. Lane County, when the legislature passed those reforms, at the advice of our non-represented budget staff, and financial staff, and the administration at that time, the budget committee and the commissioners chose to put the savings that were projected from those PERS reforms into a reserve account. So we did not spend the money that we saved. We put it aside. And now, as they recalculate PERS rates in the next coming biennium, and if they raise our rate, we'll be able to pay that increased rate from that reserve. And that's what good non-represented employees do for an organization. At the same time, they got us to bond some of our PERS debt when interest rates were low, which allowed us to fund our PERS liability higher. And we actually, last time I checked, we're over 95% funded of our liability, which compared to a lot of school districts that are actually slightly less than 80% funded, we're in great shape. So that last biennium, when they did the PERS adjustments, and a lot of school districts got 6% rate increases in their PERS rates, Lane County only had a 3% increase. So that's, again, those non-represented employees doing good financial planning and saving us, 3% of our payroll, our PERS rate, that's, calculates to hundreds of thousands a year that we're saving. And the fact that we're going to be cushioned from the next increase because we put aside those savings because we anticipated the courts defeating that, those reforms, at the advice of our, both our legal staff and our financial staff, we set aside that money. And it's those sort of things that have made Lane County really financially, even though our budget is in terrible shape, the backing of that budget, things like our bond rating, how much money we actually have out on credit. We have very little loans compared to what our actual annual income is. And compared to other counties and municipalities. We have a very low debt load. We have an excellent bond rating. So if we do take out any debt, we get good rates on it. And, you know, we've set ourselves up to have a lower PERS rate than a lot of organizations. That's all, you know, helpful to us trying to negotiate these times where the federal government's basically given up on federal forest funding for counties. And we've had to deal with a decrease where we used to get, in today's dollars, about $115 million a year from the federal government through timber harvest in the 70s to where we're getting $9 million in this last year from the federal government. You know, you can't lose over $100 million annually in revenue from forest harvest and not have that hurt the budget. But it's the good management in the background by these non-represented employees that set us up to be in a position where we deal with that better because we're not spending money in places that don't generate services. We're, you know, saving it everywhere we can, whether it's in our health insurance system, through our self-insurance, through redoing our health system down to two plans when we were at close to 20 plans at one point. We, you know, reorganizing the county from 14 departments down to 8, you know, eliminates a lot of management too. So, you know, and that's all done with the help of those non-rep folks. So keeping those folks competitive so we don't have unsuccessful recruitments really does save the county money and allows us to keep that local government functioning that, you know, we really want. So kind of completely jumping subjects, I want to go to a national item for a little bit. A lot of discussion, and I saw an interesting headline where a national candidate for president said that none of the current gun laws or any of the ones proposed would have prevented some of the recent mass shooting, mass killings and shootings. And it's an interesting thing because as we look at a, you know, a very local event here at Umpqua, you know, really, could that have been prevented, you know, through some kind of background check system? And the answer is really it wouldn't have. I mean, the firearms that were utilized in that shooting were all purchased legally with background checks. And the person involved hadn't shown up as you know, presented to a mental health professional to where they could have put them on a list and hadn't, you know, done any crimes that would have put them on a list. So, you know, how do you, what is going to prevent those events? And it is more gun laws going to be what's needed? And, you know, it's looking like the state legislature is going to go that direction. They're having a big powwow up in Salem, I think, in the near future. And they're going to look at new gun laws on top of Senate Bill 941 last year, which is basically making, you know, folks that ask somebody to hold their gun in a gun safe over the weekend while they're out of town into criminals if they don't go and get a background check first. It's interesting that people believe that new laws are going to change this, and that there's some way that that's going to prevent that. And at the same time, want to disarm people in those situations. You know, I constantly think of, and particularly when I think of the Paris situation in that nightclub, had there been two or three people that were responsible concealed weapon license holders in that crowd and been able to return fire long enough to distract the gunmen that were taking their time shooting as many people as they could and at least engaging them, how many more people could have gotten out the doors in that period of time if a concealed carry person had engaged those gunmen? But they knew walking in there that no one would be carried because it is so restricted in Paris and in France, the ability to carry. And they took their time from the upper balcony, just picking people off as they wanted to, because they knew they didn't have to worry about somebody returning fire. I'm certainly working towards my concealed handgun license. I plan to carry, and you know, folks will probably never know I do, and when I do. But believe me, the gun's not going to jump out of my holster and injure you in any way. But if I'm in a place where somebody pulls out a weapon and starts indiscriminately shooting people, I'm going to be there to defend those folks. That's one of the reasons I'll mostly carry to defend myself and my family. But if I'm in that situation, I will come to the defense of my fellow citizens. And I hope that they'll appreciate that.
If I may, real quick, do we have any numbers about how many people do have concealed carry versus how many actually abuse it?
Have actually used concealed carry?
Yeah, the numbers. How many people have it to people actually get in trouble with concealed carry? Any percentages?
Well, there've been a couple studies done that the folks that actually have concealed handgun licenses have a lower criminal rate than sworn law enforcement officers, particularly a lower murder rate, for sure. And that's been scientifically shown through some studies. But you think about, there are thousands of people in Lane County that have a concealed carry license. Tens of thousands, I should say. Have you heard of somebody in the news that was a licensed concealed handgun license and used their handgun in the commission of a crime? Because you know that the media would be out there big time showing that. And it's basically zero. Because those folks that are willing to make that decision, go through the classes, go through the background checks, get the license, and then choose to carry, have, you know, safety in mind first, because that's, you know, the big thing in the Oregon license is all about safety class. And they understand how to carry correctly. And they tend to be law-abiding people that just wish to be able to protect themselves. And that's really what it comes down to, is giving people a choice in how they wish to protect themselves. And I'm not going to tell people whether they feel more comfortable carrying a can of wasp spray around their house for home protection, or they wish to carry a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm like I do. That's your choice. So with that, you know, I'll wish everybody a good evening and hope that they'll think about their freedoms and not trying to think about controlling somebody else's freedoms as we sign off here tonight. And to think about local government and how important local government is versus national government, because really America's liberties are designed on having government at the closest level to the people. And when we move it to the national level and the higher levels of government, it's easier to violate your liberties. So everybody have a good evening. Enjoy living in this free country that we have in America, and enjoy living in Lane County if you're listening to me locally, because we live in a blessed area. Raining as it is all about how green it will be this summer in most places around. So have a great evening and good night from the Bo's Nose Show.